don't want to set the precedence that deterioration is acceptable.
I won't necessarily disagree with that either, Mr. Mayor.
So we'll, sorry to interrupt.
No, no problem. That's a good point. To complete that thought, along with several criteria that address historic preservation and restoration, council found these criteria to be of less significance than competing criteria for the purposes of evaluating this specific application. In consideration of the comprehensive plan, and council does, on balance, meet the approval criteria, and therefore the demolition is granted.
So a quick informal poll of council on the concern about deterioration is that it can be used as a tool to back into pleading to us that it should be torn down because someone, an owner, didn't keep it up.
Yep. I think the term was demolition by neglect.
Mm-hmm.
And Mayor, I think that to get at the sense of the council, we could simply strike the first part of that sentence and just condense it without changing the overall thrust of the findings.
Can you make that a motion?
I would so move to delete the reference at page 22 to the deteriorating quality of the Kiernan building since the district's nomination and propose that the sentence be just restructured so it's so the rest of the sentence makes sense.
Second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We okay so far, Ben?
Yes, we're okay so far. It's just that to the extent this is a summary, there may be findings and other elements addressed in the record that would have supported that statement. And to the extent that the council is asking that that be backed out, that may require some further modification of the tentative findings. I'm not familiar enough with it to be able to state that with any certainty. I would have to defer to staff on that question.
Could we make a motion that in addition to the specific language that Commissioner Fish noted, can we make a motion that it be struck from today, every other reference of it, every other place in the findings?
The instruction could be that staff then modify the findings to be consistent with the council's direction.
Friendly amendment, maker of the motion?
Please.
It's been a friendly amendment, second. All right. Anyone wish to testify on this motion? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion.
Fritz?
Thank you for catching that, Mayor, and for your amendment. Commissioner Fish, aye.
Fish.
Yes, Mayor, thank you. And I think the record is clear from our first hearing that we do not want to establish the principle of demolition through neglect as a basis for seeking the permit. So this is I think, important modification. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Thanks for the amendment. Aye.
Thank you.
Amendment is approved. Thank you for the staff presentation. I don't take testimony at this point, right? Or do I? Sorry.
I'm not certain, frankly.
We don't.
Him, do I?
We
no.
don't usually.
Because this is a confirmation of the earlier hearing.
It's confirmation.
Right?
And these findings come back for a final approval?
I thought this was the final.
Well, my understanding is this was a final approval. I'm going to very happily strike some things that I'm glad to have reinforced again today. So I appreciate it.
Great. Carla, could you please call the vote on time certain item number 270?
Fritz.
Well, I truly appreciate the service that is provided by the Blanchet House, and I thank them for their service to the citizens of Portland. I want them to be successful in their plans for expansion. I'm also concerned about historic resources. They don't come back once they're destroyed. This historic district has a dwindling stock of contributing buildings to maintain what has become part of the Portland character, a part of the downtown fabric. Review of this site, therefore, also requires consideration of the impact of the demolition on this that the demolition would have on the whole greater historic district as a whole. It's very important for this site as it's on the edge of the district and on the corner of the block and so anchors the entry to that district. I found the arguments in the Historic Landmarks Commission report and the Bureau of Development Services staff report persuasive. I might have been more inclined to support the demolition if I had seen a concerted effort to construct a building that would have replaced the historic features of the Kiernan building and contributed further to the historic district. I'm happy that the design will come back to council in the future. However, for these reasons, I cannot support this demolition of this structure. No.
Fish?
This is a quasi-judicial proceeding, and so we have heard from a number of key stakeholders, including the Historic Landmarks Commission. We've had an excellent presentation from the Bureau of Development Services staff. We've received testimony from many interested parties, including folks from the Chinatown community. And our job in a quasi-judicial is to undertake a balancing test. The narrow test is set forth in the law and the Type 4 approval criteria for demolition review, but it is in its carefully written legal document, which is a little arid. So I think looking at this more broadly as in our role as judges, it is our job to determine whether the benefits of the proposed use outweigh the historic value of the building. That is, in equity, what we're trying to do here. I can't think of anyone in this panel who doesn't, on this commission, that doesn't strongly believe in the values of historic preservation. And in fact, the mayor and I are working on creating a new landmark district in our city around the Halperin Fountains that specifically recognizes their historic legacy. But in this case, I believe when in taking consideration all the testimony we received, that it is clear that the benefits of the proposed use proposed by Blanche House outweighs the marginal historic value of the building. And so I'm going to support demolition review in this case, but I want to add one other point, which is the question came up in our hearing about precedent. And I believe that since we are, in effect, establishing precedent in interpreting this particular part of the code, it's important to note that each of these is fact-specific, and each one turns on the unique facts presented to us. And I still remember someone who testified last time who expressed some sheepishness about coming and testifying against the permit, and that this not appear too adversarial. Well, this is uniquely an adversarial process. And in fact, it is the specific job of the Landmarks Commission, the staff in its own judgment, and others to come up and make the case. But as judges, we're supposed to consider the totality of the circumstances. But this would not be a very useful public process if we were not getting strong inputs from key stakeholders. So I thank the people that took the time, including the commission staff, in making their recommendations. They are thoughtful recommendations. I've concluded, though, that on balance, the benefits outweigh the marginal historic value of the building. And I want to thank again BDS staff for the superb work they do in helping us work through these very tough issues. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Just to Commissioner Fish did, I think, a really fantastic job of summarizing much of my approach to this issue as well. And just to add a few details for the reaffirm for the record. I'm going to support the demolition, again, not because of the neglect of the building, not because it was cut up internally or remodeled, and not because of the specific tenant that seeks to use the space. I am going to support it because it is not a masterwork of a master architect. I'm going to support it because it is not a linchpin historic landmark in this historic district. I am going to support it because of the development potential, as Commissioner Fish talked about, for alternative uses, not tenant-specific, but, again, as he said, Wayne. And I am going to support it because of this is a very rare action by the City Council to support demolition. So those are my reasons. Aye. So approved. That gets us to the regular agenda. Can you please read the title for... Oh, he's not here. Is he going? Can you please read the title for regular agenda resolution item number 290?
Suspend system development charges for parks and recreation, environmental services, transportation, and water for the construction of accessory dwelling units or the conversion of structures to accessory dwelling units until July 1, 2013.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
We have Mike Hayakawa from BDS that is going to
walk through this proposal, but just in terms of an overview, basically what we're trying to do is incent the development of what we commonly refer to as ADUs, but are accessory dwelling units, which basically is small living units that would be typically behind a house where a garage was converted or in the basement of a house where an apartment is created, with the idea in mind of accomplishing two things, provide increased and appropriate density within the city and affordable housing, actually three things, affordable housing for folks who would rent those units and actually equally important, income for people who own these pieces of property that help by having these rentals available to them, pay their own mortgage. And today, more than ever, that's a very important aspect. So we have pleased to have Mike here to walk us through this proposal. Welcome, Mike.
Mayor Adams and council members, good morning. My name is Mike Hayakawa. I am the supervisor of the Land Use Service, the Planning and Zoning section of the Land Use Services Division of BDS. Our section is responsible for the administration of these regulations. And so what I've done is I've collected some data and would like to share some anecdotal information with you this morning. We examined both the regulatory as well as the fiscal considerations and found that by and large, zoning regulations and building regulations do not deter development, but that a reexamination of the SDCs that are assessed may be warranted. ADUs have been in the Portland Zoning Code since 1981, and they address a number of goals and policies, which, as Commissioner Leonard alluded to, have to do with addressing future population growth, increased housing choice, diversity, affordability, and economic development, along with urban design, infrastructure, and neighborhood protection. And when they were first put in the zoning code, the code restricted them in significantly. And as you can see on the slide, they were only allowed in structures of certain sizes, owner-occupied structures, structures where additions were not made in the last 5 years, et cetera. And in 1998, the City Council adopted a bunch of regulations having to do with the Livable City Project, and they made some major policy changes. And so as you can see from the slides, what they did was they expanded the roles that ADUs were playing in addressing the goals and policies that I alluded to earlier. So currently, in the single dwelling zones, what they do is they are permitted, if they are under certain size, height, bulk, square footage, they are clearly located as secondary structures. The design standards are such that they have to match the existing primary structure. What I did in this investigation is I went through the regulatory hurdles. I looked at what sorts of land use reviews were processed previously. And what I discovered was there were several land use reviews adjustments that you're familiar with, but that the adjustments were pretty specific to the set of facts surrounding the projects, and that there wasn't any pattern where there was one or more site development standards that were consistently standing in the way of constructing ADUs. There was also no evidence that there were any negative neighborhood impacts or particular stresses placed on the existing infrastructure. And so this is what I was just talking about. This table shows that.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
Can you just back up to that previous slide? So the total, does that mean the total number of ADUs that were built?
No, this table shows a total number of land use cases that were processed that were for adjustments or exceptions to the standards.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. And what it does is it kind of distinguishes. Yeah.
So what was the total number built in that time?
There are fewer than
I believe there's that information is coming just momentarily.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean, it's like almost nothing. Right, Randy?
SDCs, the system development charges. As you know, there are at least four bureaus that impose these. And without getting into any details, the following two slides show the various bureaus and what the SDCs are intended to be for, to be used for. So Water Bureau, BES, Transportation Department, and Parks. So they all have different purposes, and over time they have gone up, and then the different bureaus have different policies as to what SDCs apply to what types of construction. So, for example, I believe the Transportation Department has a different SDC for an internal conversion or basement conversion as opposed to a new freestanding construction on the same site. The SDCs in general, again, these figures are illustrative only because of what I just said, that they do change over time and there are different policies. But what this does is it gives you an indication about what percentage of the fee that's paid when permits are issued that the SDCs cover. So I'm hoping this table will answer the number of permits that we've processed since the year 2004. And what we found are that there were not that many permits that were specifically
about asked 23. For.
No, that's per year.
No, you add them up.
How many?
That's to legalize, Sam.
And yeah.
Oh, that's how many to be legalized.
Yeah.
Because you had an earlier slide where you
yes.
referenced some anecdotal evidence. Do you have an opinion as to the number of ADUs which have been constructed outside of any legal framework?
Yes, I do. That is what happens when people come in to apply for those permits and they're told about the SDCs. Later in this presentation, I have a slide that's called the creative solutions. And that's what that...
I apologize. Yes. We keep trying to steal your thunder in this yes. presentation.
We'll let you go. I'll be quiet.
The second row, of course, is just information that I gathered from the tracks data that shows what percentage of those were for legalizing permits. And I think that does allude to some of the things that we're talking about right here about the incentives or disincentives that are out there for, frankly, the kind of information that people will provide when they're seeking permits. So this is just informational for the council. What it does is it tells you what sorts of permits people asked for. And as you can see, there's a whole slew of different kinds of permits that people ask for, whether it's freestanding, put it on top of a garage, a converted basement. So this is just informational for the council.
Yes. When was this done? In 2004? Just to, having worked for the commissioner at the mayor at the time, the ADU had addition to existing garage, is that the closest thing to a garage conversion, or is that the one?
Sometimes it's a conversion. Sometimes they'll take a garage, add to it, and then convert it and make an ADU out of it. And
so it is, when you add mm-hmm. the, you know, there's one ADU addition to existing detached garage, there's addition to garage for ADU is 5, new detached ADU without a garage is 27. It's very low numbers, right?
Yes. Meanwhile, this is the geographic distribution of the ADU construction, and this too is informational, and as you can tell, most of the projects were built in the higher density neighborhoods within East Portland. By way of reminder, the council recently looked at Recap 5, which included one element associated with ADUs, that they'll be allowed up to be up to 75% of the primary structure, but to a maximum of 800 square feet. So the council has looked at something which is consistent with the recent changes since 1998 of ADUs playing a more prominent role as an implementation tool of the goals and policies that I spoke about earlier. This table shows what the total amounts of the SDCs were that each of the bureaus collected since the year 2004. Again, there are different policies that apply to different types of SDCs, but this is just an aggregate total to give the council a sense of what kind of figures we're talking about. I have included a number of slides that show what some of these ADUs look like, and I think it's important for the council to understand what they look like, and the fact that the regulations appear to be working in terms of ensuring compatibility, making sure that they meet design standards. So sometimes people are creative when they do hear about the SDCs and say, oh, it's just a playroom. We're not going to put any a second structure in. And so as a result, there is a smattering of permits in there that are not reflected in the data you just saw, where it's possible that as soon as the permit is finaled, there may be things that may be going on that we're not familiar with. And I think you'll hear some additional testimony from that about that from some of the interesting industry representatives. Speaking of which, Mr. Robertson, who owns the ADU building company, together with his partner, is here to testify, and he may have some comments on that. I conducted an extensive interview with him so that we and the council were very familiar with what the issues would be. And so besides the possible fact that the 18-foot building height maximum would be an issue, otherwise there wasn't a lot of discussion as to what other zoning code changes may be warranted to further encourage this.
So before you move on that slide, the council might like to know that I am intimately familiar with that particular ADU.
Mr. Robertson and I also discussed the impacts of the SDCs on business and on, and I'm sure he'll speak more about that. And
much business was conducted on that little porch out there.
And there is again an impact, an incentive to be somewhat creative in how these projects are represented. To summarize, we found no major zoning code issues that require reexamination, but that as the supervisor of my section, of this section, we do get a lot of traffic inquiries about it. This is all anecdotal, but it's with respect for all of my colleagues in the service bureaus that we do support the resolution. And there may be reason for the council to re-examine the SDCs. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very nice.
Great presentation. Thanks for the synthesis. Council discussion at this point. All right. Commissioner Leonard, do you have invited testimony?
There are those that want to testify, but I'm not sure at this point.
Okay.
Four people signed up.
Great. Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Joe Robertson, Alan Armstrong, and Sam Hagerman.
Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. If you're representing a company or you're a professional representing a client, you're required to disclose that as part of your testimony. Other than that, you just give your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes, and that clock will help you count down your 3 minutes. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Joe Robertson. I am the owner of ADU Building Company. I have been building ADUs in the city of Portland legally for always legally since 1998, since the planning code expanded a little bit to further promote the building of ADUs. And just in a nutshell, I see the benefit of ADUs to the community as providing affordable housing in existing neighborhoods without the need for additional infrastructure. And that without the need for additional infrastructure ties in with the whole purpose, I think, of this hearing. When I first started promoting ADUs, as Mr. Leonard referred to, I expected my clients to mainly be building them as rental units. And some have, but many others haven't. There's been many other reasons which kind of surprised me. A lot of them were for expanded family, for adult children that are in transition from college to career or college to marriage or in between jobs and those type of things. I've built handicap accessible one level units where elderly people have moved out of the primary house and into the ADU, allowing them to rent their primary house to support them, and another situation allowed family members to move into the house to care for the elderly people so they could stay in the neighborhood that they've lived in for years and loved. One other example on that was parents financed the cost of the ADU for the children, adult children that lived in the house, so that they were provided then with a part-time retirement home where they could be close to their kids and their grandkids. An example of the numbers that deal with the SDCs and the cost of an ADU is I can build a one-level cottage-style, one-bedroom ADU and on somebody's property for approximately $65,000. Today's situation, the total city permit fees, connection fees, and SDCs would be the majority of this number, would cost about $18,500. So if you do the math, that's 28.5% of the total project costs is in city fees, and at least, I just added about Mike's numbers, 14,000 of that would be SDC. So to encourage affordable housing, I believe charging SDCs is counterproductive to that and goes against, I think, what the goal of the city is to promote that. So I would encourage you to vote for it. I think it's a win-win situation. I think the city wins by increased permits. You can see they're fairly low. I think there would be more. I'm out of time.
You can go ahead and wrap up.
Okay, win-win-win with the city, increased tax revenue. Of course, the homeowners with whatever use they're going to use the ADU for, as I pointed out. And, of course, for me and the building industry and providing getting us back to work and providing more jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Sir?
I'm Sam Hagerman. I own a company called Hammer & Hand, and we've been in business for 15 years. Primarily, we do residential construction, mostly remodeling, but some new homes. And I was sat on the recap committee, recap 5, so I was familiar with the process coming into this. I would like to just second everything that Joe said. I think he spoke eloquently to the benefit that easing the restrictions, essentially, that are presented by the SDC charges on ADUs would bring to the community. Great benefit, and I sort of stand at the nexus as a remodeling contractor. I see lots of projects come through my office, and was just remarking to a friend of mine who's in the design profession that I think conservatively built 7 projects last year that essentially are being used as ADUs, but were not built that way because of the SDC charges. So they were permitted, and they're legal structures, but they're not technically allowed to be rentals. Now, I think that actually runs counter to the intent of the code, which is a good point to emphasize, because we built some structures that would be used as ADUs, but they go against all the restrictions in terms of design, conforming to the design of the original house, which is a separate argument, and I think probably the statute or the restrictions as they stand are probably a little too limiting in terms of the point of view of the design community. Design professionals would say, well, we should be allowed a freer hand in how these structures look, but I would hesitate to push that point too hard. I don't want to be a have your cake and eat it too and whine about the flavor at this point. I'm just thrilled to be here and having done the work on the recap committee and know that the letters that I sent to Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Leonard's office in terms of the SDC fees were heated, and I really just want to thank you for listening to members of the business community that know will get some benefit out of this, and I think serve the larger community as a whole. And as Joe said, win, 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 we're going to be able to satisfy the intent of the zoning in a lot more thorough fashion. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Sir?
Good morning. My name's Alan Armstrong. I'm an architect and co-owner of Outpost PDX, where our vision is an outpost in every backyard. A little competition for Joe over here, maybe. And I, just to add to the list of benefits of ADUs that we see, as well as the benefits that everyone else has mentioned, we also see them as potential for small-scale test buildings for green building prototyping and to promote the awareness of not-so-big lifestyle. One quick example of numbers that we've run into is we recently drafted a proposal for a Northeast Portland couple who wanted to expand the size and convert to ADU their existing garage office. We estimated the construction valuation for this 400-square-foot ADU at $27,000. The SDCs were estimated at approximately $12,000, which is 44% of the construction valuation. This is compared to SDCs for a new 1,200-square-foot single-family home at 8.6% of the construction valuation. At nearly half the construction cost, the SDCs for our potential project were an obvious deal breaker for the clients, and in the end, they didn't move forward. So we thank the council for their work on the size limitations and hope the same good judgment is used on this SDC issue. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for taking the time to testify on this.
Really? We have three more people. You have Beth Meredith, Eli, and Stephen.
Hi, welcome to the City Council. If you arrived late to the chamber, you're required by city code to identify yourself if you're a lobbyist or representing a business or an organization. We're glad you're here. You only have to give us your first and last name, and the clock will help you count down 3 minutes.
Great. Thanks very much. My name is Beth Meredith, and for the last 5 years, I've been the co-owner of Living Spaces. We offer design services for green homes, and our specialty is small home remodels and small home design. And our experience has echoed that you've heard already. We've talked to many clients about small footprint living and small houses being a part of that. And in almost every case, it didn't make economic sense, and the risks of doing it illegally were actually very off-putting to many of our clients. They didn't want to find a creative solution, so we didn't do that. There are the creative solutions of additions and accessory structures, which are used and quite well known, actually, throughout the community. I just wanted to point out something, because a lot of the points I came with have already been mentioned, and there's no need to repeat. But one thing that was very interesting to us when we undertook Eli and a group of us who were interested in researching this ADUs and what's been sold over the past 5 years and what was claimed as a living space is that building use shifts over time as the occupants have different needs, and that in practice, all accessory structures are multi-use buildings. A garage becomes a band practice space for a son and then his first apartment while he gets on his feet. And later it becomes a mom's painting studio in a retirement and eventually a space for live-in care while she ages at home. Ideally, we should be coding building form, that is, the building shape, size, setback, lot coverage, and materials for a range of acceptable residential uses. Also, I would like to point out that I think there needs to be some equity across properties. There really is a bias towards people who live in bigger homes having bigger ADUs, which I think is an issue of fairness. And then lastly, the point I'd like to make is that while I think I am actually fairly conservative as a designer in what I want it to fit in with the neighborhood, a lot of the design codes reinforce bad design. I live in an asphalt shingled home. This is not probably what we want to repeat throughout the neighborhood. And it also runs counter to a lot of green building strategies, such as if you wanted to use any natural building materials, if you wanted to change the roof angle for solar and so forth. But anyway, today I want to enthusiastically support what you're doing here. This is a huge leap for the community in terms of making these small homes possible. And I want to thank especially Commissioner Leonard and Sam Adams and Nick Fish, Commissioner Fish. Thank you.
And Beth, we're fixing the issue of the size of ADUs in the recap project tomorrow, the inequitability of different size existing homes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sir.
Hi, my name is Stepan Šimek, and I live in the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood, and I am actually a person who is right now in process of planning and designing an ADU in the back of our house. And I am very much, of course, in support of your work right now and of the proposal. Just to give you a little bit of a background, our neighborhood is a very closely knit neighborhood. We are well known as people who organize the Gulchorama and the soup nights and all that. And when we have presented the neighborhood association with our plans, it has been enthusiastically endorsed. We even have a letter from the president of the neighborhood association who is endorsing our building of this ADU. However, as we were planning it, we have noticed that out of the budget of about $100,000 or over that, we would have paid up until $18,000 in those fees. And that, of course, gave us a great pause. And we were at one point at the verge of really halting that project because it would have gone really grossly over our budget. Or we would have, as you have noted, needed to really redesign the entire project. And it would have been maybe not as interesting, not as beautiful as that what we had been planning. So that we are very happy to hear that you are picking up this issue, and we are very much in support because we will be able in the next 2 weeks or so to actually start applying for the permits, and we will be building something that is going to benefit the neighborhood. It's going to benefit us, of course. But it is something that I believe really promotes that what the city council is really interested in, which is strong neighborhoods, beautiful, interesting, strong neighborhoods. So thank you for your work. And as I said, I'm very much in support of this.
Thank you. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. My name is Eli Spivak from North Portland, 6325 North Albina, Unit 6. And I've been working with this group, informally known as the Tiny Home Society, Portland chapter, to try and figure out ways to get more of these built in Portland. Since 1996, when they liberalized the ADU policy, the number of ADUs peaked at maybe 50 over a two-year period and has been going down steadily since then, long before the market slowdown. And we put together a little letter, which is going over to you guys, which identifies some obstacles we as practitioners identified towards building more ADUs in Portland. And it's thrilling that the top two things on the list seem to be happening within a week of each other, with the Recap 5 and this ADU SDC proposed change. There's some others, and I just want to mention them there. They're also low-cost items, and we actually have a meeting next week with representative staff members of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, both the green building side and the zoning side, along with representatives from Metro, Solid Waste, Bryce Jacobson, and the guy at DEQ who did the study recently showing the decrease in carbon footprint and material use that you get from just going from a 2,200 square foot house to a 1,700 square foot house, showing that building smaller is the greenest thing you can do. So even outside the SDC question, my hope is that the city says, hey, let's look at this and maybe do some sort of build smaller initiative or, you know, build a small, I don't know what it would be called, but it's a wonderful time, I think, given the city's climate goals and long-standing goals to reduce construction waste and to do green building practices. I think one of the greenest things you can do is build small. So some obstacles are financing, public awareness and education, and those are things through market transformation approach, the green building services element of the OSD have made great strides towards. And I think this might be an area where they might help push, nudge the market a little bit too. Obviously, there's paycheck reasons to build a smaller house. Over the lifespan of a house, by far the biggest carbon outcome is just heating the place. So you have a little bit smaller square footage and you've saved carbon. And then it also matches in with the planning side and Metro goals for infill density. So I think it might be an opportunity, conveniently with the combining of the bureaus, to think about ways that we could at least remove impediments to small homes and financial incentives to build big. And there are a few of them out there. We're starting to work on that. So hopefully that didn't overlap with what people said before. I just biked up late. But I will leave it at that, and thank you guys for taking this on.
And we've talked about if this passes, following on to Commissioner Leonard's work and considering it in terms of financing, a piece of it might be through the Clean Energy Works Portland program, which right now is focused just on retrofits. that there might be a piece of that that might help with financing the greenest aspects of these ADUs. So when you meet with the Bureau, you can expect them to bring some ideas like that up. And the name of your group is Tiny What?
Well, it's an informal group of volunteers with some good ones, though, the Tiny House Society Portland Chapter. There already is a national group, I gather. And one thought to try and get a little help is that we've just been an informal group of volunteers and done some good stuff, but there's a limit to what a group of people can do without being in the system a little bit.
Thank you all very much. Anybody else? Carla?
End up.
All right. Any additional council discussion required? Any final thoughts? Please call the vote.
Fritz?
I'm very supportive of this resolution. I helped write the updated 1995 regulations when I was on the Planning Commission as a neighborhood land use chair. It was one of the most satisfying projects that I was involved in during my time on the Planning Commission. And I'm very happy with the way that accessory dwelling units are working out. I'm concerned that the total built or legalized over the past 5 years is only 172, and there's some reasons for that. Another of the good things that the Planning Bureau and the Bureau of Development Services did after we adopted the accessory dwelling unit regulations was a few years later, Mark Bellow did a study to go around neighborhoods to find out how many had been built and whether they truly were affordable. And I remember, I think it must have been in 2002, which was only 4 years after the code was adopted, and I remember that there were three in my neighborhood, which I hadn't known that any of them existed. I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing that people don't know that they exist because they do blend in with the neighborhood, and that's generally seen as a good thing. But if there were three in my neighborhood and there are 95 neighborhoods, that means that there were several hundred in the first 4 years, and now we're down to only 172. So clearly we need to do some things to incent more of these affordable, truly affordable homes to be built. And it does expand the living options for family members, for renters, for elder care, and it blends in with the existing neighborhood. So I agree that we want to look at some of the design standards, but be careful not to lose what we have worked so hard to achieve in terms of the way that they blend in with neighborhoods. Hopefully, lending institutions will take note of the city's actions and step forward to provide financing that's needed in this sector. I think that we can only do so much as government and that we do need to look to private partners. And I hope that those of you who said that you had clients who decided not to do these when looking at the SDCs will be on the phone to them as soon as you get back to your office and say, well, now you can move forward and how about it? Because as we heard earlier, the construction trade certainly needs all the assistance that it can get. And for people to be able to do these small dwellings that helps them as well as helps us in meeting our housing goals is certainly a good thing. So thank you very much, Commissioner Leonard and Mayor Adams, for supporting this, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Fish.
So I'm the Housing and Parks Commissioner, and I'm very pleased to be a co-sponsor of this because while it, in the short term, will result in some small decline in SDC revenue to the Parks Bureau, that is greatly outweighed by the benefits that we will have to our housing stock in terms of affordability and in terms of something that was mentioned by a couple of people who testified, which is the intergenerational aspects here of providing housing within an existing footprint for older adults. And we keep talking about wanting to be a more older adult-friendly, senior-friendly city. There are limits to what we can do to back that up, but this is a marvelous concept in terms of creating incentives for people to build smaller units in their existing homestead that are places where older family members can age in place with dignity. So that's a tremendous dividend of what we're trying to do here in addition to the housing affordability piece. I appreciate all the other values and qualities that people called out from meeting our density goals, climate action, to the 20-minute community, green building. I would also say, though, that it is important to this council that we find a way to jumpstart jobs in the construction industries, in the construction trades. And to the extent this will help people, encourage people to build more units of this kind and create good jobs, that's a plus. In this recession, this council has been very creative about looking at every opportunity to jumpstart these kinds of things, from SDCs, tax abatements, public subsidies, looking at the zoning codes, looking at existing tools with the idea of how do we encourage development, which not only meets some of our most compelling social goals, but has the additional dividend of creating work opportunities for people. I think this is a particularly creative response. I know this has been on the mayor's radar for a long time. I appreciate Commissioner Leonard really driving this home, and I'm very pleased to join with them in attacking this piece. And as Eli said, alluded to, there are many other opportunities that are in front of us, particularly around smaller footprint and creating, removing the disincentives that currently exist for people to build smaller, because in fact our current system creates disincentives because of the cost structure. So thank you for the good work on this and the good staff work, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I'm too pleased to support this. I think this is a good piece of work. I think I, like a lot of people, reacted with sticker shock when you mentioned what percentage the STCs are of a relatively small project. So we need to try something different here. And this is an experiment to see if we can, you know, jumpstart more construction of ADUs. I do particularly sympathetic to how ADUs are used for people sort of at both ends of the age spectrum, those people, young people who increasingly are shut out of the job market and need some place to live until they do find a job and can support themselves, and also for people who desire to age in place in their own neighborhood and in their own home, which to me is the most the ideal way for people to age and grow older, but to maintain independence while they're doing that. So I support that for all these reasons. Aye.
Leonard.
In addition to the benefits that everybody has heard of incenting the building of these, the part that I've focused on that Mike alluded to in his testimony are those that are built without the benefit of permit after they find out the cost of the STCs. And most people don't realize, and I'm certainly with no ill intent, the potential tragic consequence of not having a permit in ADUs in general, but particularly one I'm ADU I focus on is basements. Basements have been a place where people have placed bedrooms without the benefit of permit a number of times, more often than we'd like to think. And I am familiar with some incidents in the past 30 plus years where fires have occurred in basements, particularly adjoining to furnace rooms, and the basements had been remodeled without a permit. And people, including children, have been trapped and died in those fires. People don't want to put themselves in the position, because they don't think about that, obviously, but put themselves in the position of having a what would otherwise be a fairly minor fire incident in an accessory dwelling unit, but particularly a basement where egress is difficult, where window size is very important for people that are sleeping down there. They don't want to put themselves in the place of having something tragic happen. And then one of the first things that fire investigators do is make sure permits were pulled for wherever the area was that the person died. And if one wasn't, even if it was done legally, it's a not pleasant experience. So I'm hoping that in addition to incenting new ones that be built, those that haven't got permits for existing accessory dwelling units, and I would particularly focus on the basement accessory dwelling units, that they go and get a permit and make sure that the people that are living in those places, whether they're renting the space or their children or their family members, that they're safe. So I appreciate the work of the council on this, and I'm pleased to support it. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard for taking this on and making it happen. And this is key for all the reasons that have been mentioned already by those that have testified and my colleagues up here on the City Council. And just to underscore the point that it couldn't happen at a better time, given the significant hardship faced by the development, builder, and construction industry and the unemployment that exists in that industry. And it couldn't happen a better time in terms of meeting our goals for sustainability here in the City of Portland. So I'm really excited and want to thank you for your work in this effort. Please vote aye. Approved. All right. Good work. That gets us to item number 291.
Tentatively deny appeal of East Columbia Neighborhood Association against hearing officer's decision to approve with conditions the application of Howard Brandwine and Jerry Geblin for a land division with concurrent environmental review and adjustments for a 49-lot subdivision at 9801 Northeast 13th Avenue, LU09134484, LDSENAD.
If staff could come forward. Again, this is to affirm findings that were tentatively approved at a last council session. Do you want to quickly summarize the findings in front of us?
Sure. The hearings officer approved a Type 3 land division review for a 49-lot subdivision with concurrent...
Could you move the mic a little closer? I'm sorry.
With concurrent environmental review for stormwater outfall and approval of an adjustment to reduce the size of the required recreation tract under PCC 33.640 so that it's 10% of the area proposed for development rather than 10% of the total site area, and approval of an adjustment to waive the requirement for a tract under PCC 33.640 over an existing wetland area that was approved for fill by the Division of State Lands.
Okay, council discussion? We're not taking... Amanda?
I just have a question, and I wasn't here for the hearing in it, so I haven't had time to look at the testimony. So I actually have a question for the city attorney. Am I allowed to abstain on this?
If you haven't had a chance to review the record, yes,
okay,
I believe so.
Okay, great. And I'd just like to ask a follow-up question. It's concerning to me that we've got a beautiful wetland, which the findings say we can develop, essentially. And I'm wondering if there was any discussion or if there could be some future discussion about the code, the decision that the council made to waive or to say that the Metro Title 13 standards are now fully incorporated into city code, because it seems to me that there's a mismatch with that we could have had more protection under Title 13 of Metro than we currently have in our zoning code. Could you comment on that?
Last June, City Council did adopt a resolution in compliance with Metro Title 13, but that compliance only covers particular review types. Those particular review types would be comprehensive plan map amendments, zone changes, and conditional uses. They don't apply to the types of reviews that were requested as part of this proposal.
So this might actually indicate a further deficit in, or if I don't think that it adequately protects the resources, then it's actually a fundamental question of what's in our code.
Correct.
Thank you.
Other questions? Carla, I think we're ready to move to a vote.
Need a motion.
Is there a motion to adopt the recommendation?
So move.
Second.
We have a motion to adopt the recommendation, which is to deny the appeal of the East Columbia Neighborhood Association. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Abstain.
Fish?
I had a chance when the hearing was held to make my comments at that time. Thank you for great staff work.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
The appeal is denied. Thank you very much. Carla, would you please call council item number 292?
Amend contract with Stacy and Whitbeck, Inc. for construction of sewer system improvements as requested by the Bureau of Environmental Services related to the Portland Streetcar Loop project.
Welcome. If you could identify yourself, and we have 10 minutes set aside for this matter.
Good morning. Excuse me. If I can get my chair, here we go. For the record, I'm Vicki Deedy with the Bureau of Transportation, and I'm the city's project manager for Portland Streetcar. The item before you is the fourth amendment to the construction services contract with Stacy and Whitbeck that we have for the Portland Streetcar Loop project. There'll be one more coming to you for the maintenance facility improvements, and I believe that'll be scheduled for next week. This particular amendment has to do with the fact that in addition to the sewer system work that's being funded by the streetcar project for direct conflict kinds of issues, the Bureau of Environmental Services has also identified additional work that they would like our contractor to do since they're out there. As you know, the system on the east side is old, and there are many places where the improvements that are being added to our project will help the system over the long term. So BES has approved the scope of work for this. They have approved the pricing, and they are providing funding to the project to do this. I would also point out that of the $3.6 million project, 14% or almost $500,000 of the total costs is for work to be performed by disadvantaged business enterprises. While this is a little lower than our other contract or contract amendments, the next one that will come in, you'll see that where the DBE participation will be over 40%. So the entire project will be around 16% by the time we get through the amendments. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Anyone wish to testify on this matter, item number 292? We'll have a momentary silence while we ponder the importance of streetcars. Anyone signed up?
Veronica Vernier.
Ms. Vernier is not in the room. We'll proceed. This is emergency ordinance, so we'll proceed with the vote. Please call the vote.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 292 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 293?
Authorize interim financing for sewer system and related matters.
This is perhaps the most straightforward council item title of the day.
For a somewhat complex item. But, good morning, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. Eric Johansson, City Debt Manager. As you may recall, you approved $450 million of sewer revenue bonds in a previous council action. We're currently working with BES staff to implement that bond issue. You may also recall that Congress approved, I believe it was last year, a new financing tool called Build America Bonds, which may provide an opportunity to reduce the debt service costs on the proposed revenue bond issue. Now, the city's existing bond indentures don't work very well with this Build America Bond program. They were written at a time before this kind of a bond program was contemplated. So we're currently in the process of amending the second lien ordinance to better accommodate the use of Build America Bonds, in particular accommodating the interest subsidy payment that we expect that we would get from the federal government if we issue these kinds of bonds. Now, the amendments to those to that bond indenture requires that the existing bond insurers approve the amendment or consent to those particular amendments. We expect that it's going to take longer to get those consents than the timing that BES needs the bond proceeds. So the reason we're here today is to request authorization for interim financing, probably in the form of a line of credit that will allow monies to continue to flow to BES for their capital program while we work to implement these consents to the existing bond documents. We expect that's probably going to take about 2 months. It's a little bit of a wild card. I'm not quite sure how quickly the insurers will respond, but it's going to take a little longer than we expected. So, therefore, we're asking for approval for interim financing for up to the full forward $450 million. I don't think we'll get a line of credit in that amount. And then we're also asking council for authorization to approve the amendments to the second lien bond ordinance. So I haven't taken any questions on that.
Any questions?
So Eric, I have a question about Build America Bonds.
Mm-hmm.
What was our allocation?
There is no allocation for that program. It's unlimited, in effect. Yeah, as opposed to recovery zone bonds.
Okay.
Which were another item on the agenda this morning. But, yeah, these have no limit.
And am I correct that they are available to us as a financing tool as well as, say, to Multnomah County?
They are for governmental purpose projects, which are most of what we do and what most of the county does.
Now, in an unrelated matter recently, I learned that Multnomah County was thinking of using Build America bonds to provide some financing of some multifamily housing projects. Have we done an assessment of whether these bonds could be used as a financing tool for housing?
I have not. I'm not aware that we've done that. We'd have to meet certain requirements, but it's possible that they could be used for that purpose, but we haven't done that analysis.
Could we talk about that afterwards? Sure. And perhaps there's something we can learn from the county if they're actually
thinking of using them for that purpose, but it's a it'll be a new tool and something that I don't think the Housing Bureau we have a real deep understanding of.
Sure, you bet.
Thank you.
I know in our bureaus we're using them as, I think, as long as they are public projects that you have access to them.